Welcome back to In the Moment. I'm Lori Walsh. Are you living your life with intention? Do you know yourself? And do you know how to advocate for what you really need in your career and in your life? Author and entrepreneur Nancy Dahl is the author of Grounded, Leading Your Life with Intention. She's the keynote speaker at tomorrow's launch, the South Dakota Entrepreneurship Conference. She's also leading an interactive breakout session tomorrow at the conference in Brookings. You might have met Nancy Dahl last November when she attracted a record crowd for her book launch at the Sioux Falls Barnes & Noble. She's a dynamic executive with a track record of success in the C-suite. Dahl was the first female president of LifeTouch, and she's currently president and COO of Tastefully Simple. She joins me now on the phone. Nancy Dahl, welcome to In the Moment.
Hi, Lori. Great to be with you.
Nice to have you here. And I remember when your sign was up at Barnes & Noble saying that you were coming and to Sioux Falls for the book launch. And boy, there was a lot of buzz surrounding that. You know, what's your South Dakota connection? You live in Minnesota now, but you have quite a connection to South Dakota. Tell us about that.
I do. We have two boys, and both of them are graduates of South Dakota State University. And my oldest played football, and my youngest started the lacrosse team there. And so it's sort of our second home. We own a home in Brookings, and the boys live there, and we love South Dakota. I started hunting there when I was 12, and now we have a much bigger connection to South Dakota.
Yeah. So when you came to the state for your book launch, it's always a, you know, time of anticipation for an author to sort of figure out, is anyone going to come? And it was a full house. So tell us, like, what was that moment like for you when you looked out and realized, you know, I got to get some books out of my trunk for all these people?
Yeah, you know, it was really fun to look out in the crowd and see so many people that, you know, we had grown to know over since we've been coming to SDSU since 2010. You know, so you in the audience, you had VJ Smith, who was a, you know, author from South Dakota, and I had known him for a number of years. You had parents of the football players that, you know, we had met over the time, as well as the lacrosse team. There were professors. I had spoken in a number of classes at South Dakota State University, and so there were a number of them in the audience. And so it was really fun. And then some that I didn't know that were in the store that had either seen the information about the book or just were there and wanted to hear about the book. So it was really fun. We sold out of all the books that were there, so it was super fun.
How did, you know, what's the genesis of this book? Did it start with those conversations that you were really having with people? Did it start with your blog? How did it, you know, how did you get to the point where you thought, I need to write a full-length book instead of, and gather some of this information in one place?
Yeah, the book, you know, came about, I would say I have some pretty passionate friends who were insistent that I write down some things, and they knew my passion. You know, as a leader of organizations, one of the biggest worries you have is, are you growing the future leaders? And what is the strength of, you know, the people that you have to, you know, make sure that your business continues to be really strong? And so I was super passionate about mentoring people that were interested in being intentional about their career. And over, you know, years of doing that and pride in seeing people advance, you know, both in their lives and also in their professional and personal interest, a number of people said, you've got to write this down. It's helped so many people, and you're so passionate. And I frankly really resisted it, Lori, but I had a friend that said, you know, you are so interested. You had such an impact on so many people. Why are you refusing that same help to people you don't know?
Hmm. And ooh, that's a challenging
book. Yeah. And so, right? You know, that challenge was one that you said, okay, you're right. I've got to write the book. And so, so the book was written out of my passion for not leaving your life to chance, you know, and being really thoughtful about where you want to go, knowing that you don't have control of every move, but directionally you can, you know, get there if you're thoughtful right about it, versus let life happen to you and let others decide what they think you need to do. So
what you just said there about a friend kind of, you know, challenging you, saying like, why are you not sharing this information? That's goes directly to something that you talk extensively about in the book, which is feedback and seeking, you know, diversity in your feedback and really listening to what people have to say. How important is feedback, and how do you seek out the feedback that is going to help you do the things that you really need to be doing?
Yeah, I think feedback is critically important. You know, getting to know yourself is the hardest person to get to know. And it's funny because we spend 24/7 with ourselves, but we really don't know how we show up, and we don't know how we're how others perceive us. And that is something that you have to be very intentional about seeking the feedback, so that you can incorporate that and accelerate your own learning. I think, you know, the world's a one-way ticket to faster. And unless we take a break and really reflect on what we just went through, or what learned, you know, what did I learn? What do I want to take with me? It's going to be difficult to take that learning and apply it to our forward journey. And that, I think, is the secret to, you know, getting better. And so I think feedback is really critical. How you get the feedback and who you get the feedback is equally as critical, because not everybody's feedback is helpful.
Right. So give us some ideas of some of those first steps to how you get that feedback and who you seek it from.
Yeah, I think, you know, one of the easiest places is to start with those that are closest to you. So if you're a leader of an organization, seek feedback from the people that were in a meeting that you were just in. You know, what things did you learn from that meeting? What experience did you have? And then compare your notes to their notes. They sat in the same meeting as you did, but they took away likely some things differently. And then be listening very specifically to, you know, ask questions about what value did you add? You know, I think an open-ended question is not as valuable as if you can be more specific about the question. You know, was my presentation, did you understand the main point of my presentation, for example? Or what did the presentation cause you to think? And then listen to what the answer is. Don't ask a question with the idea you have the answer, but really listen to what people are saying and push on a second or a third question, because that's really where the, you know, where the real kernels of feedback are. And it's, I think the more diverse your circle of feedback is, you can get 8 people, and then you aggregate that and say, what were the common themes in the feedback? You know, what were the things I need to be focused on? And then how does that repetition and pattern begin to build over time? And once you get, you know, thoughtful and disciplined about getting the feedback, you'll start to see the patterns of feedback you're getting. So it's less about the individual that gave you the feedback and more about the pattern of the feedback. And I think it's something you have to learn. We aren't taught how to, in school, how to get feedback, right, how to be a self-learner, how to be curious. And I think, you know, you've got to fuel your own curiosity about, I want to be better tomorrow than I was today. So what feedback do I want that would be helpful? You can't just rely on your perception of what went well and what didn't.
And you mentioned, you know, things moving faster and faster. And when we go to work, there's a sense of, you know, are people willing to be that open and listen to each other? You know, do you have that sense of self-preservation or even just not having the time to do it? So be intentional about it. And then how do you address this idea of everything moving faster? And, you know, CEOs certainly have high-pressure schedules. The rest of us do, too. How do you address that time crunch where, you know, to set aside time to do this takes away from meeting your daily deadlines or getting to the next meeting?
Yeah, I think, you know, as a leader, you know, you can set the tone in the organization from how you, simple things, how do you manage a calendar, right? So are you thoughtful about, you know, if you're in a community where most people go to the same school, how do you observe when spring break is so you aren't scheduling company meetings and people aren't feeling bad? What do you do? I used to have gray days that I would do the Friday before Memorial Day and the Tuesday after, so that if people chose to go earlier or stay late, they didn't feel like they were missing something out. You know, it's amazing when you're intentional about calendar management, how that gives sends a signal to people about what you value. I think as it relates to the debrief, it's, do you as a leader put focus on the learning, not just the answers? And so I would schedule actually debrief sessions with my team. So if, let's say, you just finished, you know, some major project, we would schedule a debrief session and answer 4 questions, which, you know, got everybody to take a break, even if it was only for half an hour. You know, sometimes a bigger project is longer than that, but it's, what are we proud of? What did we learn? What could we have optimized? Not what went wrong. What could we have optimized? And then what do we need to take with us to go forward? So it's a way of everybody collecting their observations. You get to hear what other people saw and learned. And it's a celebration of the learning, and then you snap a new start line for everybody to go forward, so that if someone's feeling overwhelmed, everybody can catch up, and then you can kind of move forward. So, you know, I think as a leader, one of the positions is being thoughtful about your pace, because it's easy as an individual to outpace an organization's ability to change. And so you need to be really thoughtful about where you're giving the team a break.
You mentioned what could we have optimized versus what went wrong. And that struck me when I was reading the book, too, as a really important distinction. Elaborate on that, please, a little bit. Why ask what we could have optimized and why change the perspective a little bit there?
Yeah, I think it's, you know, if what people want to do with that question is they want to be able to say, tell us all the things went wrong. We somehow left the car wrecked with all the detail and the gore. And I think that's a question that pushes you backwards so you can, you know, just sort of wallow in all the things that didn't go so well. I think if you flip the question and say, what could I have optimized? It's a forward-looking question. So you already get to practice doing what you just did better. So the next time it comes your way, instead of saying, oh, crap, here it comes, I screwed it up last time, you can say, oh, yeah, I figured that out already. Come on, let's take it on. And so you can do it again. And it is through practice, regardless of whether you're in a sport or in life, the more practice we are doing something, the better we get. And so I think that question of how do I optimize, it gets everybody to offer an idea of how it could have been better. Because the other thing that happens, particularly in organizations, I call them guardians of no progress. There are those people on your team that don't wish for the organization to go forward, and they want to find reasons to stop things. So if you ask the question, what went wrong, that's a heyday for a guardian of no progress. They don't want it to go. They're going to tell you at risk, oh, my gosh, we can't go there. And it kills the entrepreneurial spirit. It kills curiosity and innovation. If you ask it the other way, what could I have optimized? Everybody moves forward together. Even some of them might not move as far forward as others, but you at least have a collective view about where there were things that you could have done better. It's also less accusatory. You know, well, Nancy, you really screwed this up. We would have had it great. We would have won, but, you know, you goofed this up. It's more, what do we need to do better collectively as a team versus accusatory and blaming? And that's part of this making learning safe. You know, as a leader, are you celebrating the learning? Are you making learning safe, which isn't about doing everything right? It's about, I learned this and now let's move forward. So that question, all four of them in sequence are key, but that particular question, you know, in the keynote speeches I've done before, or any of the organizations I've led, the five organizations I've been part of, there is that is the one question that people really want to change. And as a leader, you just can't let them change it. You have to keep it in that format. You'll be amazed at the difference in the activity of the people when you ask it that way.
If you're just tuning in, you're listening to In the Moment on SDPB Radio. My guest is Nancy Dahl. Her book is called Grounded, Leading Your Life with Intention. You can get it wherever books are sold, but you can also see her tomorrow at Launch, the South Dakota Entrepreneurship Conference in Brookings, where she's giving a keynote address and leading a breakout session. Nancy, tell me, how important is it to identify the strengths of your team, and what are some of the ways that you found are effective ways of making that identification and then working with those strengths?
Yeah, I think the strengths question, you can think about it two ways. One, first of all, you as a leader, what are your strengths, and what do you need around you as a team to round yourself out so collectively you're stronger? One and one is three. That's one way to think about it for what do you need to be the best leader you can be? How do I advocate for what I need around me? As it relates to the team members understanding each strength, because just because you need that strength in the team for you doesn't mean that your team members will like each other because they need something different. And so I think one of the things that's really important is that the team declares what their strengths are to each other and also is declarative about when I'm on the team, this is what I will contribute. So that oftentimes when you get on a team, someone's different than you are and they can annoy you or you cannot want to work with them because they're just different and you would wish for them to be similar. And so by getting people to appreciate, well, I'm on this team because this is the contribution I'm making, I can say, oh, well, this contribution is different than mine. And I now appreciate your difference because I see how it makes me stronger. So I think, you know, making it clear to, you know, letting the people identify, you know, these are things I feel I am strong at, and getting affirmation from your team, and then declaring it. Here's my strength, and on this assignment, this will be my contribution. You can count on me for this. allows you to declare strength in a way that adds value to the team. And it also brings the team together and allows people to embrace difference as a point of strength instead of, here he goes again, taking us off task. It allows you to appreciate that difference as a strength for the team.
Your career spans multiple industries. I'm looking at your bio here. Sales ranging from $20 million to $750 million, largest including 20,000 employees. As you have done all the work that you've done, how did you manage your own career? Was that an intentional path where you said, it's time for me to move to the next level as a leader? It's time for me to do this in a different industry. Was that something that you kind of mapped out for yourself?
You know, I think you can map, as I said earlier, I think you can map directionally. So, for example, let's decide that we're going to go to Fargo. We can map that we're going to go north and we're going to go to Fargo, but we might go to Miller, on to Aberdeen, to Bismarck, on our way to Fargo. So leadership for me was always a path that I wanted to be in from all the way back to high school. Any organization I was in, I ended up being president because I love leading people. I love bringing, I love solving problems. I like complexity. I almost, the more cantankerous the issue, the more fun it is for me. And I just love taking people to places that I didn't think they could go by, you know, working together. So that to me was sort of in my blood. It's, you know, I grew up in a really small town in Minnesota with 42 people, you know, one stop sign. The only people that stopped there were the ones that didn't live there. You know, it was kind of one of those five churches, five bars.
Right.
You know, everybody knew everyone. And, you know, if you got stopped by the highway patrol, you likely knew your father, which, you know, so it was one of those places. So it taught you a lot about accountability, and you had to, you couldn't just show up. You had to show up and actually contribute. So that leadership piece was something that was ingrained, you know, from a very early age in terms of what I needed to do when I showed up. I think the organizations and being members of five of them, you know, you join an organization because you like their values or you like their mission. You stay with an organization because you love the people. And I think for me, the mission of the organizations was something I identified when I moved from one position to the next. It was because I was really excited about whatever that next thing was that needed to be done. When I changed organizations, the change happened because usually I perceived that there was not much else I could do to help the organization. You know, I think every leader needs an exit, needs to say, I've made the contribution for what I can do, and now it's time to move on. Either because the organization's going in a different direction or you want to go in a different direction. You want to say, hey, I want to focus on this now and not that, but one of those two. So I think there is certainly, like in life, there's some intentionality of I'm going north to Fargo, and then there's, yep, and I didn't anticipate that turn or this turn. And so you end up then going there differently, very similar to what you would if there was road construction. You know, you kind of go around it. So I think the leadership piece was very intentional. If you had asked me in a graduating class of 42 if I thought I would be running an organization of 20,000 employees, I would have said no. I didn't think that was in my cards. So, you know, that was one of those that, you know, was an opportunity that was presented. And, you know, you listen and take those challenges on. And, you know, you work hard and you keep a light out to say, where do I want to go, and chase those things as they come your way in life.
Nancy, I've read a lot of, you know, through my job here, I, you know, read a lot of books by different authors and on leadership and otherwise. And this particular book strikes me as incredibly useful and the kind of thing that you must be getting, you know, immediate feedback from readers who say, I implemented this and this happened. It changed things. And it's a book that really respects the reader as well. So I appreciate that, and I'm wondering, just as a last question here, do you get a lot of feedback that's kind of giving you that view of how different parts of this book are being used in different readers and leaders' lives, you know, immediately?
Yeah, I am. Thank you for that, Lori. That means a lot as a writer because, you know, as I said earlier, the book was written. One of my biggest fears with the book is the only thing written more about than leadership is the Bible. And I thought, why does the world need to book on leadership? And I didn't want to waste the reader's time. I didn't want to be one of those books like, oh, my God, I just wasted this much time. I wanted to have the same impact with the reader that I was having across the table with the people I was mentoring in my organization. And so I am getting exactly that feedback. And it doesn't matter whether you're 28 or you're 74. It doesn't matter whether you're running bigger small businesses or not a business at all. You're, you know, running other things and in organizations and a community leader. The common thread is I know where to start. And it's right. not as complicated as I had made it out to be. And it is about the doing and the starting that is, you know, sort of the case. And it, you know, one of the perspectives I wanted to give is sort of help you look around the corner. How do I want to think about that to stir your curiosity? And so I'm, so that is the general theme. And, you know, I got a text over the Christmas holiday about a 9-year-old that was reading it. And he, the nephew of a friend of mine, and it was a picture of him sitting by the Christmas tree. And my friend said, he's convinced he's your son and he wants to run a business one day. So he wants me to introduce you. So, wow. You know, super fun to get that feedback. I had another just yesterday. I was visiting with someone whose son was in an MBA class that I was an instructor. And he came home and he was just launching his career. And he said, I just heard this woman, maybe you know her. And this was the question she asked. And I can't get that question out of my head. And he's just moved to Florida, so I got to hear the story. And that question helped him be more thoughtful about advocating for the culture in the company that he wanted to join that he otherwise wouldn't have thought about.
Yeah.
And so he declined actually 2 offers because the answer to the question wasn't what he wanted to hear. And so for me, if I've spurred the curiosity, if I've given you the guts to ask the question, if I said, don't leave your life to chance because it's too important to leave it to somebody else, awesome.
We will leave it there. The book is called Grounded, Leading Your Life with Intention, author Nancy Dahl. And you can meet her in Brookings. She's speaking at the Launch South Dakota Entrepreneurship Conference tomorrow. And there's an interactive breakout session that she's leading at that conference in Brookings as well. Nancy, thank you so much for the book and for your time today. We hope you'll come back.
Thanks, Lori. Bye-bye.